Okay, so we're going to start off with Hezekiah's personal crisis that he had. That's found in 2 Kings 20. And again, if you make those three marks in your Bible, we'll be looking at all three books again of 2 Kings 20, Isaiah 38, and I think we're probably in 2 Chronicles 32. So you put your bookmarks there. But yesterday we learned that Hezekiah was assured by God that he would defeat the Assyrians, but to this point in our studies, this had not yet happened. And so this was a great trial for Hezekiah. Now there's another trial, a personal trial that he was going to go through. We read in 2 Kings 20, verse 1. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death, and the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, came to him and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. So in those days it appears that this sickness happened during the problems with Sennacherib, and they were smitten, because we know that they were smitten later after the sign that was given. And that tells us of the smiting of the Assyrians to finish that story. But meanwhile, this sickness had occurred. So he was undergoing both of these trials at once. And he was told he was going to die before the Assyrians were defeated. And if we look into it more, we'll see that he had a boil. And the same word is used in Leviticus 13 in reference to leprosy. And this boil leads to blood poisoning. So it was likely that his death was going to happen quite soon. And notice it says to set thine house in order. Well, usually that means to take care of your affairs, to maybe if you have a will, or you know you need to say goodbye to your family or make arrangements for your possessions. But at this point, he really had no house. He had no wife. He had no kids. And so at this point, the line of David could not continue. We read in verses 2 and 3, and this is 2 Kings 20, that Hezekiah didn't want to die. And you may think that you know, that's, if he was righteous, you know, why wouldn't he just accept that he was going to die if God told him, you know, that he shouldn't question him? But again, I believe that it wasn't for himself. It was because he wanted his house to continue for David's sake. And also, he was not yet through leading the people. He was right in the middle of a crisis, and he didn't want to leave the people that he had led this far hanging with the Assyrians bearing down on them. So we read in verses 5 and 6, Turn again and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I've heard thy prayer, I've seen thy tears. Behold, I will heal thee. On the third day thou shalt go up into the house of the Lord, and I will add unto thy days 15 years. Now deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria. And I will defend this city for mine own sake and for my servant David's sake. So we now see once again God responding to the trust that Hezekiah put in him. He says, I have heard thy prayer. So we see 15 years was added to his life, and that basically doubled the length of his reign, and that he arose again on the third day from his sickness. Now after this, we read of a sign that was given of the healing. And Hezekiah said unto Isaiah, What shall be the sign that the Lord will heal me, that I shall go up into the house of the Lord the third day? And Isaiah said, The sign shalt thou have of the Lord, that the Lord will do the thing that he hath spoken. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees, or go back 10 degrees? And Hezekiah answered, It is a light thing for the shadow to go down 10 degrees. Nay, but let the shadow return backward 10 degrees. And Isaiah the prophet cried unto the Lord, and he brought the shadow 10 degrees backward, by which it had gone down in the dial of Ahaz. Now we discussed this yesterday, how that Ahaz refused a sign from God, And here is a sign that Hezekiah accepted. So once again, a great contrast between Hezekiah and his father. Now we may wonder what the purpose of this sign was. We recognize that Hezekiah certainly had faith and trust in God, that maybe he didn't need a sign. But it was something that all of the people could see, and so it would certainly bolster the faith and the trust of the people, who certainly would have been alarmed to see Hezekiah go down with this sickness. And we also learned from our number exercise how that this was the complete reversal of what Ahaz had done. Next, if we flip over to Isaiah now, chapter 38. There's a song there of thanksgiving for his recovery. And if you haven't had a chance to read that over, it reads like a psalm. And we'll discuss it a little bit more in the exhortation. And we'll see that it closely parallels a prophecy of our Savior in Isaiah 53. So we'll touch on that a little bit later on. So we read in about his recovery. Missing a page from my notes, but we'll just go with it here. We see that Sennacherib had not yet been killed. We read in 2 Kings 19, verse 7, "Behold, I will send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumor, and shall return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land." So Sennacherib was not killed, but we know that the angel of death was sent over, and the 185,000 were killed, and the prophecy was fulfilled that not an arrow would fall against Jerusalem. Jerusalem was completely safe from all this. And then eventually Sennacherib did return and was killed in his homeland. We'll read about that in 2 Kings 19, 35-37 of the killing of the rest of the Assyrians. It says, "It came to pass that night that the angel of the Lord went out and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. When they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and went and returned and dwelt at Nineveh. And it came to pass, as he was worshiping in the house of Nisroch his god, that Adrammelech and Sharezer his son smote him with the sword, and they escaped into the land of Armenia. And Esarhaddon his son reigned in his stead." So this was once again what God had promised as soon as he was blasphemed, that the Assyrians would not live and persecute the Israelites anymore. So now Hezekiah had made it through both of these trials. He came through his sickness, and he came through the great threat of the Assyrians. And so he prospered. Things were going well. He had fortified the city. He had put back the enemy. He had his health once again. We read in 2 Chronicles 32, verse 23, that many brought gifts unto the Lord to Jerusalem and presents to Hezekiah, king of Judah, so that he was magnified in the sight of all nations from thenceforth. You can imagine the word that would have got out and the fame that Hezekiah would have had of this great defeat of this nation that no one else could defeat. And so they brought presents to Hezekiah. partially because they were probably afraid of his power and of their God. Now this was another great trial, and Hezekiah stumbled a little bit with that. We read in 2 Kings 20, 12 to 19, that he started to show off his wealth. He kind of got a little conceited and started to boast about his wealth to other nations. It says in verses 12 and 13 that he showed the Babylonians all of his treasures. And note that God was not mentioned. No, in the past, he had always gave the credit to God, that God had done this for us, or God hath prepared us. But here, he doesn't mention God. So in verses 14 to 19, his great counselor Isaiah rebukes him. And he foretells the fact that these very treasures that he was showing Babylon would eventually be carried away into Babylon. And Hezekiah shows his confidence in God that there would be peace in his days. And there did turn out to be 105 more years of peace. And it's kind of interesting that 105, if we multiply 7, the number for spiritual perfection that we talked about yesterday, times 15, the number of years that Hezekiah's life was extended, that we get 105 years. So although he made that mistake, he recognized it, and he was sorry for it. We read in 2 Chronicles 32, verse 26, "Notwithstanding, Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord came not upon them in the days of Hezekiah." Once again, we see that Hezekiah and the nation, they went through all of this together. It says that both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem humbled themselves. So you can imagine, as part of that great nation, that all of Israel would have started to become a little full of themselves and thinking that, you know, maybe giving themselves a credit when things were going well and they had all these riches. So it was a mistake that probably a lot of the nation had made. And finally, we read of his death and burial at the end of his 15 years in 2 Chronicles 32, verses 32 and 33. Now the rest of the acts of Hezekiah and his goodness, behold, they are written in the vision of Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, and in the books of the kings of Judah and Israel. And Hezekiah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the chiefest of the sepulchres of the sons of David. And all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem did him honor at his death. And Manasseh his son reigned in his stead. So we see that he had taken a wife, and during this 15 years had a son, Manasseh, to carry on the lineage, and Manasseh became king. Also notice here, remember when we talked about Ahaz, when he died and was buried, they did not bury him amongst the sepulchers of the kings at all. And with Hezekiah, not only did they do that, but they buried him in the chiefest of the sepulchers of the sons of David. And all the inhabitants of Jerusalem did him honor at his death. And this did not happen at all at the death of Ahaz, his father. Now we have one more exercise to go through. Does anybody have any comments they'd like to make about what we just talked about this morning before we go through that? Okay. If you turn to the page that says, I think it probably says character traits or characteristics. Characteristics of Hezekiah. Now, what I'd like you to do for this is, I think I've listed 7 characteristics, if I can turn the page here. We'll divide up one characteristic for each table, and then what I want you to do on this is a little bit different. Try to think of the illustration. So like we have a characteristic, the first one is trust and faith. So what I want you to do is illustrate something that happened in Hezekiah's life that shows his trust and faith, or that would show his zeal or humility. But instead of looking it up, just, you know, we've gone through the whole story now, and this is kind of like a test to see what you can remember. So before looking anything up, just try to remember from what you've learned some examples, and try to fill in that without looking in the Bible. And then after you get that part done, then you can look up the references that will illustrate that particular trait. Okay? And try to do as many as you can. We'll do it probably for about 15 minutes or so. I'll assign a characteristic to each table, and then after you get the one assigned to you done, continue on with whatever ones are interesting to you. So we'll do the back table. We'll do trust, faith, and then the next one, zeal. And then Jerry's table there would have humility. And leadership for the back one. Boastfulness for Glendon's. Prayerfulness for front table. Thankfulness for the back table there. And then if you turn the page, you see there's blank. So these two tables are going to have to come up with another characteristic that Hezekiah had. I mean, these certainly aren't all of them. So you have to think up your own characteristic. Don't look at me like that, Richard. So you just have to think of one of the other things that you know, that comes to your mind when you think of Hezekiah. Okay, let's get back together and we'll see what everyone came up with. So the back table had trust and faith. What did you guys get? Somebody was stealing the candy earlier, so I had to hide it. It's not your turn yet.
Hey, I wasn't talking to you.
All right. Okay, we'll go on to zeal. We got to hurry up and get to Jim's table.
Zeal. The table on humility.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, the thing that really jumps out at me was just how quickly he did that. You know, he turned it around to have that much energy and, you know, zeal to turn everything around so quickly and to get all the people behind him was amazing. Yeah, right. Yeah, rose early in the morning and yeah, it was good. Uh-oh. That was for Julie. Okay, Jim. Maybe somebody else would rather speak. Yeah, I love that verse that when he got that letter from Sennacherib, how he said he spread it before the Lord. It's just a total giving of yourself up to the Lord. Jim, here's some candy for you.
I'll try to catch it.
Oh. All right, Jim.
Another caramel.
Oh, another caramel. Oh, look at that. He almost dove out of his chair for it. Okay, that was good. Yeah. Well, it says, I'm hoping now everybody came up with these without looking in their Bible first. Did you think of all the illustration? I was going to ask how that went, if everybody could, because I really shouldn't give you candy unless you, if you had to look these up, then, okay. Good, that's good. Okay. Okay, how about the leadership table? Okay, yeah, that was, I mean, it's just an incredible example of leadership, of how someone could turn the people around that quickly. And, you know, all throughout his life, we see that the people were behind everything that he did. And they shared with all that he did. So it was good. Must have had a confidence and sincerity that you just couldn't help but follow him. Okay, who wants to brag about their characteristic?
We got boastfulness.
Oh, he got it. And it's good to know, like, you know, that's why I think the kings are such a great study, because they, you know, none of them were perfect. They did great things. Some of them did, you know, terrible things, and some were great, and yet they still were human and made mistakes. And so that's what these are here for us, that we can identify with them. So that's good to bring out that he did have some weakness too. I think my throwing is much better today. I don't know what you guys think, but. Okay, prayerfulness.
Well, we said the first thing that he did that he started when he got married from Syria was that he.
You go, talk a little louder, I can't hear you very well. Louder?
The first thing that he did when he got the letter from the king of Syria was that he went to temple and prayed. And then also later on, he humbly prayed for his life. You know, and it wasn't so much for.
Yeah, it was good. Like, really, that kind of ties in with trust, that everything that he was faced with, the first thing that he thought to do was to pray to God, and not only that, trust in his answer of what would happen. Very good. Now, this table, they went through all of the characteristics, and they got something down for all of them, so I thought that was pretty good. So we'll give them a Smartie. Do you want more than one Smartie, or is that... They're just smart enough between the three of them, I guess. Okay, thankfulness.
You thank God for giving him 15 more years. That's in Isaiah 38, 10 through 19. That's a pretty long prayer in thankfulness to God. I always wondered if he didn't make a mistake asking for 15 more years. God knows more than we do. And
And obviously God, you know, if he didn't want Hezekiah to live, he certainly didn't have to extend his life, but he evidently wanted Hezekiah to continue and see the nation through the crisis. Sure, if he had a brother, or does anyone know?
I'm sure there would have been a way, otherwise that wouldn't.
Yeah, it could have been. God knows the end before the beginning, so he probably knew what his power to do. It may have been a death
before his power. You wonder if it was a wake-up call they had to play. He was so focused, it seemed, on the temple, cleansing the temple, and organizing the nation, that he didn't get married and have a family and keep the seed, and all
right.
God says, put your house in order, you're going to die, and it's like, I don't have a house.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
right.
But it's so natural. I mean, the natural thing would be to get married, have a family, and right. Then worry about it.
Right. Glennon? Okay. Did I throw things at you guys yet? I don't think I did. Somebody. I can't throw it at Buddy because I'll hit the light. I'm afraid. On the bounce. Here comes another, a bonus one. It's.
Yes, a cucumber too.
I haven't had to throw any of my rocks yet, so that's good. You know, it might be that if the nation would, for multiple generations, just get augured into wickedness so much that it would be hard to bring them back. But, you know, you can't really question God's power or inability to do that. But it does seem like that. Yeah. And that's just human nature, too. It seems like things go well and it causes you to fail. And then when things get bad and then you finally kind of realize how bad they are, turn back to God, and then things go well again. And so it seems like a never-ending cycle, that maybe that's was the whole cycle of the nation of Israel. So. Okay, what was the next table? They didn't have one, so we'll see what they came up with for a characteristic. Three. That's part of the trust that trust exercise with Amy that we did is that though she fell backwards and was assuming that I would catch her, she also tried to brace herself just in the chance that I might not. All right, very good. What was your loyal reference?
Did you, was that yours?
No intercepting of candy. I won't throw at him while he's answering a question. Okay, Seth. Oh. I thought my throws were getting better. Here, give him a candy for hitting him in the head. Okay, and then the last table, what did you come up with for traits? Okay. Look at that, one-handed. What was the reference for what, courageous? Those are all good. I had just a couple more, and some of them probably overlap, and we could kind of see some overlapping. That I had that he was a motivator, you know, to be able to get the people to do all that, and part of that would maybe fall under leadership. That he was thoughtful and compassionate because he always prayed for his for the people in various instances throughout their life, and just seemed to always think of the people first. And that he was not presumptuous, which we kind of talked about, that he prayed for help, but he didn't presume that God would do everything for him. And I had that he was innovative and intelligent, industrious and progressive, which is just some of the things that he did, like regarding the conduit. And I had fearlessness, which would go with courage, I think somebody said. So, does anybody else have any comments on character traits? Okay.
My problem, I'll take care of it. You know, it's like he turned it over to God, and God accepted.
Okay.
I thought maybe caring, because it doesn't really sound like he was saying, you do this or else you'll go to the rats.
Yeah.
So,
you said caring?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a lot of the traits you can see they're similar, and some of the things that he did might show courage and compassion and caring and a bunch of things at the same time. But certainly he cared for his people, certainly more than himself. Okay, well, there's a lot more that as with any study, that we could have covered more. There were a few interesting things that, if anyone's interested, I have more information. Just let me know, and I can share that with you with some handouts or whatever. There was a cylinder found it's in the British Museum that had kind of a journal of Sennacherib and his dealings with Hezekiah, and I have some information on that. Oh, he's got it right here. So it says it's a prism. It records the Assyrian account of Sennacherib's attack on Jerusalem. And so it was, I don't know when it was found, but anyway, it's preserved and it's in the British Museum. And there's some other artifacts in that museum too. If you ever. Yeah.
He actually captured Jerusalem and made him a prisoner inside the city.
Which he did.
Well,
yeah.
He kind of surrounded it, but he never
got there.
It said, Hezekiah made a prisoner in Jerusalem, his royal residence, like a bird in a cage. So I guess maybe that's true that they were surrounded and in the city, but that's all the further it got.
He did it first.
Yeah, you're not going to record for posterity. Yeah. He wasn't around to write the last part, maybe, was his problem.
Amazing, though, that they found that.
Yeah. There's a lot of artifacts from biblical times that are in that British Museum. If you're over to visit the brothers and sisters in Wales.
Is that in London?
Yeah. We could do that, just hop across the pond there. Another thing is a Song of Degrees, which was a compilation of Psalms 120 to 34, that many think describe what Hezekiah went through. And it's kind of an interesting study on the side to go through those and see how trust is found in those Psalms. And, of course, the last thing is Hezekiah's conduit, and there's some more information on that, but we kind of passed around to give you a rough idea of what that looked like and the process involved.
Anybody want to see that?
Yeah. It's time for a commercial. Go ahead, Jim. That's available to see. Yeah, I know. I think the whole thing was intact, but I don't know if it's what was unearthed or what. Yeah, if you're interested in finding out the answer to that question, how much of the Hezekiah's conduit is visible to see? So anyway, if you'd like any more information on that, just come and see me and I can send you some. If you want any information about the trip, then let's see. Sure. So now that we've looked at these characteristics of Hezekiah, and we have different characteristics kind of floating around in our minds, it's time to turn those on ourselves. And you know, we've applied them to other people, and it's pretty easy for us to judge other people and assign characteristics to them. But we're approaching the time where we have to start thinking of ourselves and examining ourselves, thinking about these characteristics, and ask ourselves if we have those, whether they might be good or bad. And we'll do that in our next session.